This episode of The Real Dirt is sponsored by Arkev Seed Banks. Seeds, clones, and weed. Portland, Oregon. So, Steve, this is The Real Dirt with Chip Baker, a cannabis podcast with business, technology, and politics of our new legal cannabis market. And I am here with Steve Geeter, and I'm going to let you introduce yourself.
My name's Steve Geeter, and here sitting in Trinidad with Chip.
Trinidad, California.
Trinidad, California. Humboldt right. County.
Humboldt.
Up in the redwoods on the coast.
Right, sitting looking at some redwood trees out the back window here.
On a misty, rainy afternoon in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, this is the Molecule Studios, we're calling it.
Molecule Studios. Yeah. I like it already.
Yeah, you know this building's built in the shape of a THC molecule.
I was told that.
Yeah.
Local legend.
Local legend has it.
Has it. And Trinidad is a drinking town with a fishing problem, from what I hear.
That is true. So here in Humboldt with my good friend Steve Geeter. Steve is involved with so many aspects of cannabis, from supplying equipment, manufacturing fertilizer, dispensaries, extracts, political movement, social movement, the hemp movement. You are becoming, or have become, or are a enthusiast cannabis entrepreneur.
That's correct. Yeah. And I got involved in this whole, now they call it an industry. Back in when I was about 17, walking around the Grateful Dead parking lot in Philadelphia, somebody said they had some good herb. I was looking to get some. They called it Humboldt. I thought that was a type of herb.
Yeah, totally.
I later realized it was a place.
It was a region. Yep. Absolutely.
Yep.
That's how it used to be, though. It used to be called, like, the region that it was from, right?
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
You get Humboldt, then when you were in the rest of the country, they'd say, oh, this is Humboldt. And then when you'd come to Humboldt, they would say, oh, it's from Honeydew, it's from Alder Point, it's from Petrolia, it's from Fieldbrook, mm-hmm. it's from Oric.
Yep.
Right.
Salmon Creek,
before all the clones started.
Yep.
Right?
It's true.
So when did you come here?
I moved to Humboldt County in 2001.
2001.
I moved from South Lake Tahoe. I lived there for 3 years before. And I moved, I was in Leadville, Colorado for 1 year, and straight out of Philly.
Right. So that was 2001. So you started the North Coast Horticulture Supply 2001.
This year's the 15th anniversary for North Coast Horticulture Supply.
Wow.
Or as most locals like to call us, NHS.
NHS. Wow, that was 15 years ago. I do you remember the first time we met in your store? You might not remember. Do you remember this?
I'm not positive.
You're not positive.
I'm not positive. Right. Remind me of the first time.
It was that car dealership, your first shop, All the boxes. You just had boxes stacked up on the floor and no shelves.
I decided I'd open a shop in a building that was all glass windows on the highway in Humboldt prior to Paul Gallego saying, oh, everybody, I will not prosecute anyone for green drug cases.
Right. And that was the former district attorney, Paul Gallegos. And previously we'd had Terry Farmer, who wanted to prosecute and rob anybody for anything and would bust people for 10 plants.
Yeah. Right around that same time, they passed the thing saying, you know.
Oh, I remember everybody was like,
a 10 by 10. Everybody can grow a 10 by 10.
Dude, did you see that guy open up the hydro store right on Highway 101? Oh my God, he's crazy.
Yep, exactly.
Right? You remember the stories.
Oh, I put lights in the window. I'd swing the lights. I would swing back and forth in the busiest part of the night so everybody knew I was there.
Right.
You know, people were like, "Why? How can you think you're going to open the store? You don't know anybody in town. You're going to open right up on the highway. That's a horrible location." But I started looking into advertising, billboards, magazines.
Yeah, right.
I thought it was worth $20,000 a month in advertising to be in that spot.
Yeah.
So it was worth putting myself out there. You know, you open a business, you're selling yourself. People came in there and eyed me up and down. Who do you know? Where are you from?
Oh, yeah.
I was 23 years old or so, opening a store from Philly out in Humboldt. I didn't know a single person when I moved here. And so I just went for it, put myself on the stage. And I went to school for horticulture. Before that, I've always had a green thumb and I love to solve problems and I love plants and trying to do the right thing. I thought I could open a store in Humboldt that would sell nothing but organic nutrients. And then I found out that I couldn't buy that.
Right.
As a supplier.
Right.
Those things were unavailable
yep.
to me as a retail store owner.
And still are
in Humboldt County and still are to some degree.
Yeah, right.
And just the practices that I saw here when I first opened my eyes and people started to tell me things they trusted me.
Right.
Blew me away.
Back then it was very, I mean, I'll use a derogatory Humboldt term. It was very oaky back then.
Okay.
You know,
that's fair.
It was pre-internet. It was pre-open discussion on cannabis cultivation techniques. You literally got to learn from your next door neighbor or just discussion and conversation at the coffee shop or the bar. Right.
Yeah, that's correct.
And until the internet came about it's so funny we say that. Until they invented the internet, we didn't know shit.
When computers, you know? The keys were this big when I was a kid.
But you know what I'm saying, man.
100%. Like, I remember when computers came to school.
Yeah, right.
First year we had them.
It was different back then than it is now, for sure. People hid. People were scared. They didn't want to talk openly about it. At the grocery store, anyway, at the bar, like,
how about the grocery store?
I got pounds of growing outdoor, indoor, like the greenhouse.
How about the grocery store on the highway?
Yeah, exactly. And definitely not the grocery store on the highway.
There's nowhere to park.
So that was 2001. I came into your
late
shop.
Late October.
I probably came into your shop 2002, though. Yeah, 2002. Right. It was a little bit later. Right. I remember the East Coast, you know, accent was still there predominantly. You've totally gotten rid of it now.
I don't know.
15 years later, I mean, I'm going to jump out and say this. You may have some of the largest hydroponic garden stores in the country right now.
It's true. Yeah, it is true.
Yeah.
I think recently we looked at some numbers from some different reports we were being fed, and it seems that North Coast Horticulture Supply does approximately 2% of the national hydroponic market.
Holy shit.
And at one point I would say, I know we had before Colorado popped off, we had the largest and busiest store in the country.
Right.
In a town called McKinleyville, California.
Yeah, right.
Never heard of that, have you?
Never heard of that. Right.
Locals, I heard that was called Oklahoma by the Sea.
Okie by the Sea, Georgia by the Sea.
And then I moved there and I agreed. And I moved out of there as well because my neighbors, shooting too many shots off for no reason in the middle of the day in a quarter acre property.
Right.
And that's
guns in Humboldt.
That's Oklahoma by the Sea.
Yeah, totally. So that shop's like 25,000 square feet, 20,000 square feet.
In McKinleyville, it's 16,200
square feet
of covered space where we have warehouse stuff for some of the other stores. But I think the retail spot is about 6,000 where customers can access.
Right. How many other stores do you have now?
Five at this point, five other stores, three more North Coast Horticulture Supply stores, and I'm a partner in Headlands Garden Supply in Fort Bragg, California.
Right.
Mendocino Coast.
Wow. How much did you start that first store off?
I had about $13,000 myself, and I got a partner that also put in 15 grand, and I agreed that we agreed 50-50 partners. I would run the store and get paid to do it. And we shook hands.
Right.
No business plan, no loans,
mm-hmm.
Nobody there.
Just doing it. Just going.
I said, I'll do it. You trust me? Give me, you know, 15 grand. We'll do this. And that's my partner to this day. Same situation, you know.
Awesome.
Yep.
That's great. It's great to have good people you get to work with. Well, man, now you're, I mean, I
got $30,000 worth of whisk snips now.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Which no most doubt, people dude. Don't know what that is still, but that was the number no one doubt. Trimming
well, people still
piece when
those.
I opened up the little whisk snips. They were number one.
Are people still buying those?
A little bit, yeah.
Right.
Of course they are, you know.
Right.
On Bull County then.
Yeah, I know, man.
People do think, I mean, those things work good.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
For some people have smaller hands, bigger
hands. The
blue
ones or the steel ones?
The blue.
The blue.
The blue.
Right, right. With
a little two finger. A thumb and a finger.
Right. The snips, they're what are they technically called? Thread snips.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's all these legendary stories about Fisker's reps coming up here.
Yeah.
In the early days, like, what? How in the world are all these people?
I hear those urban legends of turkey bags and Fisker representatives.
I think it's true. I've seen them.
Yeah, you've seen them. Yeah, hell, now they know exactly what's going on. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah. But you know, interestingly, the roaster bags are almost still a California like thing.
Yeah,
right. Like
I think so.
You know, they still are, and throughout Colorado and throughout the rest of the country, I see Ziploc bags and I see literally vacuum seal bags.
Yep.
Right. And that's how, you know, people package it. Like
that's the East mixing with the West.
Dude, it's Canadian. It's the Canadian leftover from the 90s, right?
Right.
You know, like stuff all that shit in an 8x11 vacuum seal bag and send it over
double,
to me.
Triple.
Right, right.
Double
right,
triple.
Right, right. And but yeah, still in Humboldt, they use turkey bags for sure.
Yeah, you know? Turkey bags are it's classic.
Yeah,
I mean, so we have some ostrich bags.
Oh sure,
ostrich bags.
What are those 20-pounders or 10-pounders?
Looks like it's definitely at least a 10. It's definitely at least a 10.
Wow, you're a complex guy, Steve. Let's like list off all the stuff you're involved with just to say it. I mean, I thought I might have a lot of stuff going on.
I mean, I'm not too bad being put on the spot. I mean, I usually thrive like that. When you're like, here, introduce yourself. Sometimes I get caught up.
Introduce you. Well, here we have Steve Geeter with Humboldt Green, North Coast Horticultural Supply, Headlands Garden, Humboldt Wholesale, House and Garden, Hummingbird Dispensary, Ganja Yard, the Ganjery?
Here you go, Hummingbird Healing Center.
Hummingbird.
The Ganjery.
Hummingbird Healing Center, the Ganjery.
Ganjard.
Ganjard. Fresh Strange, Rolling Green, Humboldt Bud and Breakfast.
What?
And the Honeydew.
CO2.
Wow, that's pretty impressive, Steve.
Oh, so in my spare time, I decided to start a local nonprofit called Community Pride and Peace down there, CPP. You down with CPP?
Yeah, I'm down with CPP.
Yeah,
that's
you
for
know
sure.
me. You know,
down
so,
with CPP.
So that's how that came about.
Right, right. Wow, man. You span it all. You're doing manufacturing of nutrients with House and Gardens. You own that. You're part of that. Right.
I'm one of the owners of House and Garden.
House and Garden Nutrients, formerly a Dutch nutrient company that you were the distributor of, and you bought them out last year.
We did. It wasn't even quite a buyout, but the details are kind of unleft benounce to me because at that point I was less of a majority owner and less in the decision making process. So I kind of got a call that said, "Hey, guess what? We just bought House and Garden."
Wow, that's.
It was unbelievable being the fact that I was the first person I knew in the U.S. here to use House and Garden. Maybe there was a guy named Malcolm Morrison that got some of the stuff around the same time down there in Santa Rosa. But you
took off with it. You took off with it.
Yeah, we did. And I was the first person to put it in people's hands and see how it worked. And then I also drove it around for 13 weeks the first time we had the chance to distribute it in straight and brought it to every store that I knew in the industry from east, middle of the country, up and down the West Coast, and represented the product. We used it. It worked better. We couldn't believe it. We gave it to customers. The same thing happened. We searched the company down. We did an exclusive deal on a handshake deal that lasted us until those folks were willing to sell us the company. And we were able to move it from Holland, from Alsmeer, to Arcata also starts with an A. Arcata, California.
Arcata.
C-A-T-A.
Yeah, Arcata.
There we go.
Not Arcadia.
No, don't book a trip to Arcadia.
Nothing's gonna be cool down there.
You wouldn't be the first stoner that tried to come see their friend and book the trip to Arcadia.
Dude, you're not at the airport. I'm at the airport now, man.
Wait a minute. I think you're about 13 hours away, son.
Yeah, right. So Humble Wholesale is what you developed that company in order to distribute the house and garden products.
It's true. Yeah, I first brought a house and garden into my store and through the franchise that I was a part of, which is called Family Hydroponics, which I'm also an owner of proprietor of that company.
Wow, no, we didn't even mention that one.
We forgot about that one for a minute.
Wow, yeah.
Forget your roots.
First hydroponic chain,
definitely,
of stores,
100%.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And I was the 13th one to open up. It's always been my lucky number, and it's called Family Hydroponics because a partner of mine opened a store with his mother and then his brother, and decided, hey, this is a good thing. Let's try to help other people do this.
Lots of mom and pops in the hydro industry, especially in the early days. Now it's a little different.
Yeah, but yeah, definitely. Just like the state's legal models are different. In such a vast way, I think it comes along from that same mindset where in California, you'll still see a bunch of mom and pop hydro shops, but in a new market, and I'm not going to pick on it, but like Colorado, you know, it was a little bit of a mixture, right?
Yeah. No,
and now in a newer market somewhere in Colorado, like that market is a little mixed because it happened a while ago.
Yeah, right.
So there were some mom and pops and some real big business people that got into it right away.
Yeah, right.
But now, you know, let's see what happens in Ohio. You know, it's a whole different. Actually, let's save that for later. We just flipped the script. No, the whole world just spun inside out on that one.
No doubt.
In the molecule, what's the name of it? The Molecule Lab over here?
This is the Molecule Studios.
Molecule Studios. Molecule Studios. I'm feeling the Molecule Studios right now.
Feeling the Molecule Studios. High in the Redwoods.
That's it. High on top of the world.
Top of the world.
Don't mean to take it too far out in the trees, but that was North Coast Horticulture Supply. My retail stores brought House and Garden in through Family Hydroponics. I only had one store at the time. So then through my store and the 12 other stores, we were able to secure a distribution because we were able to at least have some immediate buying power as a wholesale company because we had support of our chain there, not obligated by anything more than of a handshake in the beginning of all this stuff as well. So, but people just, you know, you support the stuff that makes sense. So I've always, like I was saying earlier, I was the first kid in town that always had the green bud in stock. So I wasn't going to stock my shelves with some stomped on brown stuff that was shipped in some diesel container and smelled like gasoline or something.
Well, that brings us right to your Humboldt Healing Center dispensary. Hummingbird Healing Center.
HHC. Hummingbird. Yeah, Hummingbird Healing Center. I'm a partner in, and Hummingbird is a dispensary that will be opened shortly in McKinleyville, California. As soon as the local ordinance moratorium is lifted and the county can then accept applications for what they have said, you know, maybe around 15 dispensaries. Believe it or not, in Humboldt there's two or three dispensaries, and it's been that way for
forever.
But that's a whole nother topic too. So, but either way, it's related to Hummingbird Healing Center,
right?
Dispensary that I'm a partner in with Nathan Johns and Ken Hammock. And those two gentlemen and myself are waiting for the county to lift that moratorium so we can get to work, helping to heal the community. And
so doors aren't open. You
the
got
doors are
facility
not open.
Together.
Correct.
They previously in the past were in operations.
Correct.
But there's a current moratorium, and the city of Eureka probably will lift that in the coming future, hopefully by the air date.
The Humboldt County, actually on the 19th, it's on July 19th, which is just a week or two from now. Right. It's on the agenda for the Board of Supervisors meeting where they hope to, within 30 days from that point, be able to accept applications. So we're only about 40 days away, 45 days away.
Oh, sweet. Man, tell me about this other cannabis-related businesses that you have here. There seems like there's six other ones.
Well, let's see. So recently, December 31st, 2015, I submitted some license applications to the county, which would in turn give us good standings with the county if we went through all these pieces of applying for a business license in order for priority processing with the state of California, when and if they pass the law to have regulated adult use cannabis in California for profit businesses, 2018, January 1st, 2018 is supposedly that date that's we're it, looking at. Right, so if right. you,
it's California, so who?
Yeah, knows that was that. Probably a little confusing. So we put our application in as soon as possible. Now
so you got an application in for several
priorities for four different licenses, which are all going through regulatory procedures to be a legal cannabis business in Humboldt County, California, as of 2018.
Right, right.
So one of them is called the Gangery, like a winery, but the Gangery. And
Ganjaman.
The Gangery, it's the oldest word for cannabis that we know, is ganja.
Ganja.
It's the roots.
Yeah.
It's the roots of the
Ganges,
of the plant.
Man. The Ganges.
That's it. They're holding it down. There we go.
Right.
And then we got Ganjard, which is like a vineyard. So those are the two names of two farms that are in southern Humboldt County, up on the top of on the ridge, just above Fruitland Ridge. And then the Honeydew CO2 is a company that we'll open legally when we can, where we're going to process cannabis with CO2 equipment, extraction equipment. And we have a gentleman who is on staff for us who's been processing since 2009 in Colorado and has now come on out to California to help make this a reality for us.
Right.
And the Honeydew is the name of that company. And then, and business there. And then, yeah, Hummingbird Healing Center is also filing for a state license, a 10A license, which would allow us to do potentially the most integrated model in this, that the right. state offers right. at this point.
So you've got these brick and mortar businesses involved around equipment. You've been very successful distributing product across the whole country and probably even the whole world. You've
I think
made,
that's safe to say.
You've made lights. You've made a fertilizer. You've made you know all kinds of garden products.
We brought the first digital ballast to people in Humboldt County. Right. We were the first people to sell compost tea that I know of in the industry.
Yeah, definitely.
In Humboldt.
Yeah.
We were the first people to provide a cocoa-based soil or pure cocoa.
That's right.
You know all about that.
I do know all about that.
And things like that. So those are things that people do now and to first people to sell mycorrhiza.
Right. So you're a pioneer in all aspects of this. I see you twitch a little bit at that, but you're a pioneer.
I think so.
And you've managed not to get slaughtered in the newness of the wilderness.
We do things different.
Right. So now you're moving on to this new world of cannabis because we're talking about all this stuff and it's unregulated in California yet. Even though people may think that it was legal here first or they had medical cannabis here first, it was really this gray area that didn't really allow for business. But now there's business and they're going to allow for business. You're expanding over into it. You're a successful business person. You've done really well at all this other stuff. And now you're making the migration over.
Humboldt Green.
Right. Now for other people, I mean, I say this all the time. Everyone who's ever smoked a joint at some point has been like, oh man, we can grow this shit.
Definitely.
Right. I can grow $1 million worth of weed and I'd be fine.
Oh, yeah. Lots of good ideas happen.
Lots of good ideas happen when you're stoned.
Ideas happen. It's a better shirt than should happen.
Yeah, no doubt. But you're really good at implementing this. And I'm just interested in that moment that it goes from non-regulated to regulated industry, from illegal to legal industry. And you're on the cusp of all of this right now.
In fact, Humboldt Green, a company that I started as well, we do consulting for businesses that are trying to trying to make that bridge the gap. We communicate with community leaders on all levels. We communicate with right. planners and everybody from the sheriff. I've sat down with the sheriff. I've had a festival in Humboldt County called Cannafest
right.
that Humboldt Green produces, and
right.
We've had a cannabis parade through Eureka called the Yes We Can, CANN exclamation point community
right.
parade.
Right.
You know, we've worked with all aspects of the community, and I don't think it's all about making money, but this community here thrives on the cannabis industry, the underground industry, to be able to live the way this is and preserve this place and keep the big business out. That's been a big piece of it. And so now big business wants in, people are in desperate situations, and it seems like a good idea. So it's a hard fight right now. So I became a little more politically active in the last few years, having the vision to see some of this stuff ahead of time. It puts some weight on your shoulders as well.
Right. Because you've planned for it. You see that it's legal. It's going legal. You're putting in infrastructure, political infrastructure, economic infrastructure, physical infrastructure, and doing all this, you've developed a way to do it. And that's Humboldt Green. Part of Humboldt Green is this consultation wing.
Yeah.
Because see, you know, I'm Johnny Stoner. I want to be involved in the cannabis industry. And I've been running a Subway, manager of Subway or Burger King or a furniture store for 10 years and say, hey, man, I can do this, but I don't know how.
Right.
And so I can call up Humboldt Green and say, hey, Humboldt Green, help me out.
It's just like the conversation we're having right now, that we had the same conversation 10 years ago.
Yeah, right.
You and I.
Yeah, totally. We did.
Tick, tick. I don't know exactly when, but... You know, we met maybe 15 years ago, 14 years ago. I had a business going. You had some cocoa,
some other things going on. Just starting Royal Gold back then.
The business entrepreneurial spirit, we connected on that. And, you know, the further we communicated, you and I would call each other up and consult with each other.
Yeah, right.
It's the same
kind
of thing.
We didn't have anybody.
It's the same thing. So doing the same thing. I've been in the center of this from the outside, just plopped down like an alien from somewhere different. So I've had a different perspective, and I think it allows for me to help just about anybody realize what they're trying to do in this industry. And it feels good to do that kind of work. I like to help people and build things and create. And so consulting to me, that's what it becomes. You know, you have to make money, and I've had failures, and I've had way more successes, you know?
Yeah, totally.
But it takes a failure to get it. You get it. So I'm not going to learn on your failures.
Right. I'll try to learn from yours.
Exactly. And that's why you and I would talk about stuff. Yeah. I've asked you some serious stuff.
Yeah.
I know we've influenced each other in business. And to do that, to have that open discussion was something that we would be real quiet about.
No, I remember we didn't have anybody to talk to.
Stuff,
and like now, like the infrastructure with the legal cannabis industry, with the regulations coming in the cannabis industry, so many industry organizations, man, there's a lot of people to talk to. There's a lot of resources to get now. And, you know, 10 years ago there wasn't, and we were even that was just in the ancillary businesses.
Yeah.
Right. Cause that, you know, at the time you had, I guess probably I started the hydro stores in Colorado 10 years ago now, or close to 10 years ago, 9 years.
Yeah.
And you absolutely helped me out in those early days. You had already pioneered that thing. Right. And, helped me out with that. But yeah, we didn't have anybody to ask. You go ask your distributor and they're going to tell you whatever's best for them.
Right. And so we could get on a conversation and be like, oh, did you hear that grease bond?
Right. Hey,
cause you got to look out for yourself. And it became increasingly hard as the sharks seen what we were doing. They come in
and circle. Right.
Pick us apart.
So now it's different. Now we can talk. Now we can talk to people.
Right.
I can, you know, we both own ancillary businesses.
Humboldt Green helped produce the first cannabis farmers workshop series 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
During Humboldt Green Week, something else that we came up with.
Right.
Humboldt Green Week is a celebration of all things green during the week of 420, which is our cannabis holiday, and Earth Day. And we started doing that 10 years ago. This year was the 10th year anniversary for that. That's the whole concept of what's happening in the industry right now, is how do we do the right things to the environment while being able to maintain this industry, which provides medicine and adult use cannabis, as well as textiles and a number of other things that we all know about hemp. Well, the stalks of our cannabis plants can be used for a good majority of the things that hemp stalks can be used for, if not all of them.
Yeah, right, because it's cannabis. It's the same plant. It's different growing technique. It's a different cultivar.
Yep.
Right? But it's still cannabis.
Cannabis it is.
Cannabis it is. Hey, let's take a break right there. This is Real Dirt with Chip Baker. Today I have Steve Geeter as a guest. We'll be back in a minute. And we're back. Real Dirt. Steve Geeter, Chip Baker. So it's not just Humboldt anymore, is it? It used to just be Humboldt, right? Like all of the weed in the country, pretty much until 2005, 6, 7 was pretty much grown in Humboldt County or right around here.
Right. And what the other neighboring communities like to try to say Emerald,
right. Yeah, they Mendocino and Trinity, they always want to be involved in Humboldt's glory. But it's true. It did blossom from here. Years ago, they called this area the Green Triangle, Humboldt, Mendocino, and Trinity County. 2002, 2004, Mendocino legalized for 25 plants per person, and it really started to happen down there. Outdoor cultivation really started to come back. Same time, outdoor cultivation was coming back here in Humboldt County. Greenhouse techniques, light depth techniques started to be developed. But a huge indoor cannabis here, you know, years and years ago until the oil prices really changed. Huge generator operations, you know. This is where it all happened.
Yeah, that's where that knowledge came from, mixing the indoor knowledge of the light deprivation, having that be so much of a basis of that, the success and that level.
Yeah, yeah.
If you understood how to keep your lights right and not turn your lights on and keep your cycles right, that was all you needed to do in the beginning, right? So indoor, and then I think a lot of those folks, as you know, you evolve in some ways, and devolve in the same way,
and then
put eggs in different baskets, as different, you know, the more intelligent folks that I've seen, you know, would spread their eggs around as quick as possible versus in regards to indoor or outdoor. So people might start in their closet.
Most big growers here do it all.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's quote unquote grower. They're like indoor, outdoor, light depth, greenhouse.
It was seasonal because it was still, you could get away with doing the outdoor in the summer, because everybody else was doing it, so
because it's perfect grow environment for it.
And then, and then in the fall, you get a second crop if you pushed strong, you know, early crop, late crop, if you were pushing hard.
Sure,
but usually you just planted. You know, people took that planted outdoors versus start in the closet and build your way up to be able to afford some land.
Yeah, right.
And having acquired all this other technical knowledge along the way, so then you see people then would have more sophisticated operations, which they put a lot more into them, but they would lead the market in quality and production. So more of an evolution was where this knowledge would blend together, you know, because you couldn't do all these operations alone. So you hire the folks that were already working, the hard working people from outdoors.
The loggers.
The guy that woke up at noon and or lady that woke up at noon. And, farmed for an hour or two and the lights came on at 9 and then stayed up till 3 a.m. and slept till noon. And, you know,
right. Different
and
farmer.
I don't mean to, you know, stereotype, but
or belittle it. Right,
that's just
right.
That's how it works. That was a different type of lighting cycle. You'd be up with your plants. You have to get up and do stuff.
9 p.m.
so
to 9 a.m. Right.
You'd be up
7 to 7.
And right. just exposure to that much light and stuff keeps people up longer and stuff. People are like, I can't
on their,
sleep and all this stuff.
Get on their plant cycle. Right.
On the
plants
plant
wake
cycle.
Up at 9 p.m. I wake
That's
up
the way
at 9
it goes,
PM.
You know?
Yeah, no doubt. I know people like that to this day. So it used to be, I mean, now it's everywhere, literally. And we both know from the hydro industry and from the manufacturing industry, we sell products all over the country now.
Yep.
Right. I mean,
every
single state buys product from you and me, probably.
I mean, I don't mean to like shine no light on anybody or anything. I won't use a name right now, but yesterday I did see in the headlines that a customer that I've known for many years, in the sunny state of Florida, down there in Miami, was just, you know, I don't know how this is related, but it's just, you know, there's people everywhere using our stuff.
Yeah, everywhere. But, right.
You know, there was like, they found the most cash ever in Miami-Dade County.
Oh, wow.
In a garden supply store owner's walls.
Oh, I did hear about that. Right.
A couple weeks or a week ago. I don't know. I just heard about it yesterday.
But, yeah, right. Well,
but, you know, just the idea.
Some
that,
odd debauchery he got involved with or something.
Yeah,
Let's not even bring up his debauchery.
Yeah, I heard it was something different about, you know, some
non-cannabis related stuff.
I don't know. Maybe I'm maybe not. Maybe I was. I didn't read the headlines. I just saw the most cash ever. Miami-Dade County.
Well, in Miami, that's a bold statement, right?
Yeah, it is.
So it's everywhere now. You mentioned Ohio. I mean, do you even know all the states that either have regulated laws now that are going to?
I don't know everyone, but I do know.
We got Colorado, Oregon, Washington, California, Nevada.
All right. Ohio just became the 26th. Pennsylvania was the 25th.
Right.
Pennsylvania
is
the sixth most populated state.
And so you were just in Pennsylvania with Humboldt Green.
Correct.
Right.
Yep.
And you were speaking to some political and business leaders there on how to implement the new cannabis regulations.
Yeah, and some medical leaders as well. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I went out there and spoke on a panel. Actually, I had a presentation that I put together. A half an hour presentation myself, but there was a few panels that were up there. Senator Leach from Pennsylvania is one of the gentlemen who helped and his whole team and a number of people helped push this this bill through in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania approved their medical marijuana, like they call it medical cannabis, but they still have it called medical marijuana over there right now.
Yeah, right. So many states.
It's the legal term, and the legal term's only been used pretty much to prosecute, so we like to shed that and take that derogatory term away.
Let's focus on that one statement right there. So
okay,
let's do it, man.
Yeah.
Like it's cannabis,
yeah,
it's ganja,
cannabis.
It's herb. Those are all positive names, right?
Is.
Marijuana is not a positive name because they created this name in order to prosecute people that were growing a plant cannabis.
Right. I mean, it was the war on drugs. It was the Spanish word. Coming from, say, Mexico.
Marijuana.
For this herb.
There's even thoughts that maybe Hearst even made this up.
There is some.
Right.
Somebody
just made it up.
I've read that.
Right.
Either way, it was a term used, and it was, you know, the war on drugs, and it was the propaganda era with cannabis.
Right. And it stuck. And it's in the law books now, and now they say all and every part of the plant marijuana.
Yep.
Right.
I went to a town hall meeting in Southern Humboldt about a year and a half or so ago.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And there was the Blue Ribbon Panel. And I stood up.
Blue Ribbon Panel was a political panel that was put together by the state to investigate how to regulate cannabis, right?
Is correct.
That what you're talking about?
100%. It was made up of...
state of California.
Yeah, some senators and some... our Lieutenant...
Lieutenant Governor.
And we had
Paul Gallegos was on there.
We had some local sheriffs on there.
Right, right.
A little bit of a piece. There was a doctor on there. A piece from a bunch of different aspects.
No ganja people. All political or law people.
Correct. Right. And so I was in this meeting, and I like public meetings. I learned that you can stand up there and influence the people that it makes the most sense to influence. I never believed too much in the political system, except for on a local level. And now I've noticed how local levels had made a change on a statewide level for us as well. So it's nice to get involved. You can see so many more things.
Yeah, right. So you're at the Blue Ribbon panel. You stand up and you tell them, hey, man, this is cannabis.
Yeah.
This isn't marijuana.
I said this word's rooted in racism, and it's rooted in war on drugs. I asked them if they hadn't noticed all the people who are starting businesses and the farmers and the scientists who know this plant and the people who know this medicine, for the vast majority, we're referring to the plant as cannabis.
Right.
And everybody on the panel there and everyone that was on the mic earlier in the day, everybody used the word marijuana. And I've taken a little bit of ridicule for saying that too, because people like to be, the same way they've always been. That's fine. I'm not knocking it, but I think everybody can understand what we're talking about.
It's time to make a change.
And if we show a little respect.
Make a change in name and terminology. That's the first start.
Yeah, a little respect. That's what I think it is. So anyway.
Absolutely.
From that point, the Blue Ribbon panel, as they went to their next meetings, they told the rest of the state how cannabis was the right word to use. In fact, it's changed some local verbiage as well as on a state level at this point.
Was California the first state to use the word cannabis?
I believe so.
California.
And Colorado,
it's marijuana, of course.
Oh, yeah. And they definitely attest to the idea that in Garberville there, in Redway, that's what opened their mind to it. So we don't take credit for it, but we helped influence it clearly, directly. And
People think about it differently. They have preconceived notions of what marijuana is or means. And most people that don't know about the plant think that it's this like heroin or acid,
mm-hmm.
It's like this extracted substance. And when you talk about cannabis, it's a plant.
Right. People look at you differently when you say it.
Cannabis is, they're making a plant illegal? Yeah, it's been illegal for like 100 years, man. Can't believe it.
Right.
No, how can there be a plant illegal? Well, wait a second, this is marijuana? Right? They talk differently about it then.
It's true. I mean, I was just in Puerto Rico for 6 days, and Puerto Rico just passed some medical cannabis laws. And I was having different conversations with folks while I was there. I had to explain to a couple people what cannabis was because they just knew marijuana,
Right. Yeah, but, I've made that explanation dozens and dozens of times. That's for sure.
A good friend of mine was over there. He got hired to be a consultant to the state, to Puerto Rico, to help rewrite some of the details in their laws right now. Mark's Law of I Comply, Colorado.
Puerto Rico is changing their laws.
Mm-hmm.
Virgin Islands is changing their laws.
Yep.
Florida, Hawaii, Texas, Georgia, Philadelphia, Ohio,
yeah.
Illinois, wow. Like
Arizona,
New York, yeah. Massachusetts, Arizona, like everybody's really
Nevada.
Changing. It's all happening, man. Like it's really happening.
It's 26 states now have medical cannabis laws, and I don't know the exact number, but I think by the end of this next voting session here, we could have 35.
So let me say this.
35 states.
Oh, man. Republicans going to come into office. Oh, Donald Trump's going to come into office. Oh, we're going to have a changing governor. It's going to change everything. How do you feel about those statements?
I think political opinion shifted. Again, Pennsylvania just passed their medical law with 92% of their politicians voted for that. The largest one before that was 68% a few years back in Michigan.
Right.
92%.
It's huge.
That's Republicans and Democrats.
You're right.
Conservative to answer your question.
And non-conservative
that's how
people. Absolutely.
And that's in Pennsylvania. That is as blue a state as you can get.
Right, right.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And this is the thing about cannabis, is it brings all types of people together. And It's preachers smoke cannabis, junkyard owners smoke cannabis, police smoke cannabis. Yep. Like, so judges, you know, even the doctors too.
That's it. And so through our music and the cannabis culture, it brings everybody together. Doesn't people see less color? People see less numbers. You know, there's a lot of, there's so many different isms out there.
No doubt.
That cannabis
it's
is
not turning
always,
back. That's what I was trying to get you.
It's always bring something, bring people together.
Right. So it's not turning around. It's only going forward from here.
It's the good church.
Right?
You know?
Like there's not going to be a law that makes it illegal now across. It's not going to stop. They can't stop it. The forces that want to stop
this
it cannot
train is
stop
bound
it.
To glory.
This train.
Talking about my.
This train is bound to glory. No, you're right, man. It's happening, and it's happening now. So many people are scared about it here in California. Because they've been involved in the non-regulated industry for such a long time, mm-hmm. and now it's a regulated industry, and they don't know their position in it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not going to change. It's going to become regulated. It's going to become legal. There's still going to be black market industry associated with it, just like everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there's going to be a regulated industry. And we're gonna see that for... That's going to be happening for the next coming years.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
I mean, this is like 20 years from now, we're still going to be talking about this.
Definitely.
Right? Like, oh, illegal marijuana field, legal cannabis field, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just based on the way that every state's evolving differently. And just if you look at like alcohol laws, for example, or even pharmaceutical laws, that how they differ, and food laws and agricultural laws, how they differ from state to state and county to county within the same states. And a lot of it does go back to political influence, and but there's still many different ways that this will continue to evolve for so many years, that there's alcohol regulations are big on there's things voted on every year in every state on these things. So it's going to be the same way with cannabis.
It's going to continue to change.
And I just say alcohol because it's, you know, it's an easy model to look at.
But, alcohol gambling.
But if you look at how different the cannabis industry is here, that's been happening for 60, 70 plus years, potentially, an underground outlaw economy that's existed that long, doing billions and billions, maybe $5 billion or $6 billion worth of cannabis activity in a county of 140 some thousand people, 150 miles long by 80 miles wide.
Right.
Think about those numbers. There's about 10 to 15,000 outdoor cannabis operations that they can visibly circle on a map for you.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, right now, fishing game, and how vast this is just unreal.
Yeah.
And so you have the wine industry we're compared to a lot. The wine industry was something that was started out of a field. There was it didn't. So
there's no indoor wine growing.
No,
there's now, but like you know, for cultivars and clones and nurseries.
But it's just that it wasn't an illegal thing to do. So the outlaw piece of it is always going to be there to some extent, but how much of it will be dictated by how well the market. You know, convenience does sell things, you know, and like I haven't bought any illegal wine from anyone, but I've been given wine that people make, you know, and sometimes, I mean, if you make too much, I guess that's there's some kind of laws around wine, but you know what I'm saying there?
Yeah, no, I get you.
Like
right?
Back in Philly, everyone has, in Italians call it the same thing, Dego Red. And I know Dego is not a good term, but whatever. That's what everybody calls it. All the Italians call it Dego Red. It's Italian table wine.
Right.
People make barrels of this, you know. And they,
totally.
That's some of them
bootleg?
Sell it, and that's bootleg. Right. Yeah, they're making barrels of this stuff. Because
they're just making it back in the kitchen.
Right.
And like got a bunch
and
of
they
5 gallon.
Buy and sell and trade it just like they did in Philadelphia a couple hundred years ago when the country was founded over there.
Right.
In the Italian market down there in Philly. I was just down there a couple months ago.
Yeah, those were all the, you know, I grew up with bootlegging stories in the South. And right, my uncles and grandparents, moonshine. And they always had these stories. And as I got an adult, I realized, oh, wait a second. All those stories were like 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s stories. Like Prohibition had long been come and gone, but there were dry counties throughout Georgia, you know, and it was regulated and shunned and, you know, people hid their alcohol.
Dry counties, right?
Yeah, dry counties.
So if the neighbors got...
Yeah, it's like, you know, Grandpa Werner, he was like making, you know, liquor and alcohol out of whatever he could.
Right, and then the craft of it and the legacy and all these different, you know...
Developed.
Pieces taste different from Grandpa's farm because of the other things growing there, the climate.
The natural yeast.
The way he did it in that old basement or up in that attic or whatever it was, you know. And that's the artisanal piece that we have written into our bill and written into our laws here. Hopefully that'll stick in California right now.
Yeah, yeah, right. Wow, speaking of artisanal speech, well, let's roll some up over here.
Yeah. That sounds like a plan.
I happen to be fortunate enough to have... some of the winner of your previous cannabis cup here.
Oh, the bowl, the Cannafest bowl.
The Cannafest bowl.
That's what you have on the table there?
Yeah, this is the OG Kush.
Oh, wow, look at that.
Won the competition there.
Look at that.
I'm connected.
You know people.
I know people.
Nice. People.
As soon as I found out it won, I was like, hey, man, I need some of that.
Well, there you go. So there you go. That stuff works.
Oh, yeah, man, I love OG Kush. I know so many people think it's a fad, but like the terpene complex is just incredible to me. I love the way it smells.
Hmm?
Yeah, what's terpenes. That? Those are secondary.
What's a terpene?
Those are secondary compounds.
Oh,
they're responsible for flavor and smell, Steve.
Nice. Right. Do you think they have any medicinal value?
You know, not only do I think they have medicinal value, but I think that the terpenes are what are actually getting us high to different degrees.
No way.
Everybody has a 16%, 18%, 20%, 29% THC. I don't think that matters so much. It's the terpene complex. It's what it smells like. It's what it tastes like.
So you think the terpenes are maybe what give you a different type of
I think the terpenes
feeling
are what gives you high. A different type of feeling and vibe. And, you know, there's an essential oil industry right now that's developing. And it's pretty much proven what we're saying. Right? You know, the essential oil industry is a, like, you know, several $1 billion industry. Right, of housewives and moms and yoga teachers and religious people.
I have about 40 different bottles of oil in my house.
Yeah, right. I bet you.
And stoners.
You're probably a doTERRA supplier or something.
No. I don't supply. I just buy.
Yeah, right.
There we go. We got a. I think that might be called a Mendo Multo. We'll give Mendo some respect for making the best grinder. This one's actually called the Willits California. Oh, look at that. It is the Mendo Mulcher. Look at that. The original Beast Grinder.
I've had that since.
In Northern California.
Dude, I've had that since 2002.
I have to say, Mendocino made the best first grinder. Good job, Mendocino.
They did. What was it? Sweet Leaf? That was the first one.
Sweet Leaf. I seen that too. Yeah,
that was the first one.
This Mendo Mulcher, guys, they I don't know. And I say, guys, maybe a lady started the business, and I wouldn't doubt it at all.
Yeah,
I hope she did.
No doubt.
Mendo Mulcher seems like kind of a masculine name. Maybe it was just a really good marketing. Since
if I remember it correctly, these guys had a machine shop started making mulchers and quit everything at the machine shop except. Making mulchers.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't know too much of the history on these guys.
Yeah, totally. Place. They were down in Mendo for a while. I don't know if they're in operation or not any longer. You can see that one says Willits, California. They haven't said that in years and years.
No, yeah.
Right. And I got another one in the other room that just says Mendo on it or
something. Mendo, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think I have a Willits, California one, but I definitely got one that says Mendocino on it, I think. Mendo Mulcher. Man, they just got plugged hard on this thing, dude. Have to call them up.
Yeah, no, I need a sponsorship from Mendo Mulcher.
No doubt. They might make a nice tray or something these days, too. You know what the worst thing is, right?
They're probably
when you get out into the woods, you just took a hike, you got the fattest joint rolled and a goddamn lighter around.
Where's the lighter? Hey, do you have a lighter?
Anybody?
Hey, anybody?
Lighter?
Lighter? Hey, let's see if we can call somebody from out. Hey, anybody outside have a lighter?
If we were nicer to the squirrels, maybe we could get someone, we could get one of those folks to bring one in. So, classic right now, Chips left a room to catch a light. And once again, don't ever go for a hike without a light. So we got some OG Kush here from the winner of the Cannafest Cup, the Cannafest Bowl, pardon me. We decided to make a Cannafest Bowl, and we had a local craftsman, two different ones work together, two of our favorites.
You mean the physical trophy?
The trophy.
The trophy, right. I just saw this yesterday.
This thing was sick. And Wood Labs helped us do the wooden pieces of it. And Brian Raskin over there at Mirador Glass blew the glass piece to it. We put some LED lights in it, and it's amazing. You could check it out on the website, cannafest.com.
Did you pull out some old grow lights, LED grow lights, and put in there?
Well, we could have. They're kind of bulky, ones.
We'll get a picture of that up and get it on the website.
Nice.
Chipbaker.com.
All right, chipbaker.com. Check it out. Well, cheers to Danny.
Yeah.
Cheers to Danny.
Cheers to Danny. Yeah, I think we'll be chatting with him soon.
Nice.
As a matter of fact.
Cool.
So, you know, one interesting thing about the cannabis industry is the terminology, right? You got like three terms that we could pull out here that the most of the world doesn't know about.
Oh, some terms that the world doesn't know about.
Ganja, cannabis.
I mean,
industry-related terms.
Yeah. I mean, something like footballs is a pretty funny one.
Footballs is a pretty funny. Now, most people would think a football is a ball that you kick with your foot, right? But
yeah.
What is a football?
Or even a ball that you like throw with your hand.
That's the pigskin.
Most countries call soccer football.
Right.
But we call it soccer.
We call it soccer. A pigskin.
But anyway, a football is known. That's a pound of weed. It's a pound of weed.
And it looks like a football because it's put in a turkey bag.
Yeah, and the more you scrunch it down to make it nice and tight, it becomes a little bit oblong. If you had some old Big Bud, something like that, it would be a perfect little football because it'd be fluffier and just about the same shape as a football, a little bigger than your average size football, and that's a pound.
Rugby. It looks more like
rugby.
A rugby.
It does look like a rugby ball.
Football.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I hadn't thought about that one for
these
a minute,
are,
that one's a good one.
Okay. I mean, I'm thinking of some really common ones, but they're funny, like babies.
Football.
Babies.
Babies.
You got any babies?
Then those are juvenile.
So we're talking about lingo.
Marijuana this plants, is, right? Clones.
Clones are babies, yes. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Babies could even be seeded babies, but nobody nobody really does that. So they're clones.
Yeah, they're babies. Clones. Babies.
So everybody's got different lingo, but those ones stuck. You know, there's all kinds of different things. Your friend texts you something back in the day. You're like, what the hell are they talking about?
Right.
But babies and footballs, those are easy.
Babies.
Tickets.
Footballs.
Tickets. Same thing. Damn, pounds.
Right, pounds.
But let's see. What's another good one? You did say three.
I did say three. Depo. How about Depo?
Depo is a good one.
Depo is a good one. Now that
Depo is a good one.
That total slang term, right?
Depo is total slang.
It's for light deprivation.
Depo.
I don't see how they get it though, right?
No,
like deprivation.
Deprivation.
Shouldn't it be like Depra?
Depra.
Instead of Depo.
Depo's
just
way
makes
more
it cooler. Cool, you got the Depo, bro.
We have a little bit of a culture that's coming from a few different angles. So we
got there's so many different
hard folks
languages here. We have to like reduce the vocabulary a little bit.
It's true, and try to confuse people. We don't want the person at the next table know what we're talking about.
Right. Now like Depo would be the act of light deprivation, but like Depths.
That's pounds of light depth
weed.
Which, if you're slick enough, you might push his indoor and get a couple extra hundo.
Absolutely.
And,
that absolutely does happen with the good smart people. We got
greasy ones.
Yeah, greasy ones. Grojo, one of my favorites.
Groho.
Groho.
Is that what you said?
That's many Grojo, other people's
you said,
favorites.
Sorry.
Grojo. You know, he's the worker at the farm, right?
Joe Grow. Yeah.
And the Grow Ho is someone...
Not a tool.
It's not a tool.
But maybe...
That would be someone who's taking advantage of a grower in some way. It could be male or female, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it could also be of someone that's being taken advantage of by a...
grower.
A hill papa or mama.
Oh, that's right, right.
The hill boss.
She's my grow-ho. She'll do me. He's my grow-ho.
Get the
grow-ho out here, back in. Yeah, okay, totally.
Maybe that's the trimmer that also maybe makes love.
Yeah, right.
I had a good one a second ago, but that hit right there kind of, that OG will do that to you. I had a good one there for a second.
Triple double.
A triple double.
What's triple double?
Triple double. It's in basketball term, right?
Okay.
But it's also double sealed triple bags.
Oh, double sealed triple.
Double
bag.
Triple or triple double.
Right, right.
Triple sealed double bags. Double triple.
Yeah.
Double bags. Triple sealed.
It's commonly double triple double sealed bags. Triple bagged. Double sealed, double triple.
I got it.
Yeah,
back in the day, back in the day, people, when I moved up here, I'm like, what the fuck?
Is it double triple?
People were talking about it while they were buying sealers and around the sealer. So I figured
that
out.
That basically means is it packaged and ready to transport?
Packaged and ready to transport.
Double triple.
In three bags, double sealed each, or two bags, triple sealed each.
Right, double, triple, triple, double. I see.
Triple, double.
A different technique. I got it.
So there was generally confusion, as you could see. I said triple, double, not double, triple.
So we got the easy stuff, too. Like we got indo.
Indo.
Yeah, indoor weed.
Outdo.
Outdo. Outdoor weed.
Outs.
Outs.
Yeah.
Dep.
Dep.
Which is light dep weed.
Yeah.
Greeny.
Greeny.
Greeny. Commonly a greenhouse.
A greeny. Definitely.
Greeny.
Yep, yep.
Trimagants. I like trimagants a lot.
Trimagants is a good one.
Trimagants is a good one. And you know, I got nothing against trimagants either, man.
No.
Everybody's got to work.
No.
You know, the farmer's got to have some light.
Which trimagants a term used, derogatory
it's
type
a derogatory term. Derogatory
term. Used for folks from out of town that are coming in here to trim cannabis and make money for the farmers who need help trimming that time of year.
Right.
Harvest season typically, which has kind of turned into all season, and the Arcata Plaza used to have people there on harvest season, and they're there all the time now, every day of the week.
You know, I now live in Denver. I've lived in Humboldt for almost 20 years and still have a home here. I'd love to come back to. That's where we're at right now.
It's a beautiful home.
And thank you.
In a beautiful place.
And last fall I was here, and you know, I'm reading the Lost Coast Outpost and read the newspaper, and I like, you know, joke about like, oh, some trimmers are here. And the past few years I'll come here and I'll see the people on the side of the road. But last fall, holy shit, the plaza of Arcata is full of people. With backpacks, with signs that have just pictures of scissors. There are well-dressed people. There are Wookiees.
Yeah, I've sure you not. I had seven languages one day. I walked around as a little something I was
Russian,
doing for community
Japanese,
pride and peace.
Hispanic, Spanish, right.
Switzerland,
French,
a lot of Northern European.
Swiss, German.
Yeah. Yeah.
So many people.
You name it. You
so
name it then.
Here. So, hey, I'm at the plaza. I pull up. Going to the coffee shop.
There, unbelievable. Right?
And I see these two guys in a pickup truck next to me, and they're pointing people out on the plaza.
Trying to figure out who they
want to figure out who they want to go hire.
I do the same thing. Let's point them out. Whoever comes over here while we're pointing gets the job.
Right,
we should do an experiment on this radius.
Oh, yeah. Just go
me
out
and you
to the
go
plaza.
There. I'll throw a flannel on for the first time I have since someone put me on one as a kid. And I got a one piece.
Hey, yeah, we'll get you
made
a grow
from deer
outfit.
Skin. I bought it from an Australian gentleman years ago. I'll throw that on. I'll go out there. We'll point. Whoever comes over to us is hired.
Right. Who's that guy right there?
Hired for an interview for
yeah,
5 minutes.
Yeah, right. That can be our man
do
on
some
the street
trim interviews.
Our man on the street interview. Yeah, you know, that's a really good idea. I should do that come fall time. I'm going to do that.
Head out to the plaza for a day. On the,
gonna head out to the
if
plaza.
If you want any help, yeah. I'd be happy to help you. Or we could get some volunteers from the Community Pride and Peace Project. We'd be happy to work together on anything like that, because that's we're trying to bring awareness to what's going on. Right.
That's kind of how the Community Pride and Peace started. Is so many people come into the community here and they kind of trash it. They don't understand how to live. A lot of them are younger, straight out of homes, or don't have enough life experience. I'm being compassionate here, right? To understand how to treat an outside community, you know, or in anyone with respect, themselves included. And they trash the area, they defecate in, you know, doorways, they put trash on the streets instead of in the trash cans, they sleep on the streets, and it's they're
become violent, you know,
become violent. That's, everybody's that was, getting drunk.
That's where
and
it crossed
high.
The line. That's what crossed the line. I was attacked while breaking up a fight, got knocked out, hit from behind. Shorten the story, and a few months later, I saw this.
Damn, you're a big dude. That'd have been like four dudes jumped you.
No, one dude from behind can get you.
Yeah.
I thought we were good. I walked away talking to someone. This guy hit me, knocked me out. My head hit the ground. It woke me back up. And I woke up. I had a mild concussion for a few weeks. And a couple months later, I seen this guy on the street and I thought, there's that dude. I'm gonna tar and feather him. You know, that was the first thing you think of. You know, you want to.
Sure.
And I'm a compassionate person as well. And I don't, you know, violence at that. You know, violence isn't something you do like that at all.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Self defense is a slightly different thing, but
this wouldn't.
You know, so I seen this guy. I felt bad for him, really bad, and started thinking, what can I do to help this? Because there's a lot of these guys like him, and there's a lot of people like me, good citizens trying to help somebody else. And
that's
then there's a lot of people over here on the far end of that trying to take advantage of somebody like that. So what could I do?
Because there's a lot of drug and alcohol problems. There's a lot of mental illness. There's a lot of unwanted people. And that's who we're talking about.
People living on the streets.
People living on the streets. Because it's easy to live on the streets up there.
So there is a slightly direct link to some of these folks that came here as a trimmigrant and ended up as one of these folks on the streets with a drug problem and or alcohol problem.
Or they already had the drug and alcohol problem and they were able to stay here because of the trimming.
Right. And I mean, I don't cite it for many of those, but there's also people that come to Arcata because it's been acceptable here for so long to just kind of run around like that on the streets. And there's a social acceptance level in a community of outlaws that extends all the way from one end of the community to the next, where if I'm not going to call the cops on my neighbor because we're both growing some plant, or we know that somebody, you know, when you have such a huge piece of your community that relies on an illegal activity for food and shelter, and to put food and money in their bank and food on their and clothes on their family, people don't call the cops on each other for panhandling. Someone's, you know, there is a direct link to the social more little compassionate community, and there's a level of social acceptance of just activity that's considered in other places to not be socially and morally acceptable. So I don't know. That's one thing that I cite for some of the issues on the streets. There's so many. There's not one thing. People get into arguments. No, it's because of this. No, it's because of that. There's so many.
It's just like every other problem.
There's so many aspects.
It's never just one thing. It's like five things, three things that
I like
make
to say,
the problem.
Yeah, I like to say for every problem, there's five solutions. You know, that's something I live by.
Yeah, that's true. It's been trial by fire in so many cases in your success. I know, like you feel that success through failure, and you just fall on your face and learn from it and move forward. Man, I'm wondering if you got like some advice for new cannabis entrepreneurs, whether they're in ancillary business, hemp business, CBD, or like, you know, directly touch the plant, you know?
Yeah. I mean, some of the most important advice that I think I could ever offer or give is even more general than having to do with the plant, just like, you know, ways to make decisions, you know. In an industry that's evolving so rapidly, there's anxiety and there's a sense that decisions need to be made right away. So there's already a sense of desperation. And just from being good in business and being the first kid to sell lemonade on the corner and first kid on the street that bought a lawnmower, you know, I've learned some things in business and about money, and I've always been quick at sorting things and building objects with little toys as a child and stuff like this, you know. And something you'll learn is to not make decisions based in desperation in business. So I think that could be one of the most important pieces of advice. But how do you now, you know, that I just gave you a problem in some cases, you know, because it's kind of a dire situation. So it's not for everybody, and you have to work with people. You have to work with others. You got to be willing to work to each other's advantages, you know, and build a team of people, you know, to get things done. And in a rogue environment, how the cannabis market has been so far, people aren't used to having to work with each other too closely, you know.
Right. Right.
Share information, you know, share trade secrets and industry knowledge, totally. And all this stuff that's proprietary
magic.
Things now, you know, which is, follow that 3-2-1. I'm like, what's 3-2-1? They're like, oh, you use 3 parts of the veg part, 2 parts of the micro, 1 part of the bloom. That's the veg formula for GH. I'm like, what's GH? They're like, oh, it's blue, red, and yellow. I'm like, why would you want that? We got the same thing. It's called cutting edge solutions. It's all clear. Or whatnot. Right. There's no dyes in there.
Right.
Made locally.
That's three-color stuff.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3. Use it the same way. Use that other recipe.
Right.
See, there's some stuff there. 3-2-1.
Yeah.
1-3-1.
Yeah, there you go. There's some more. Well, thanks, Steve. So, I appreciate you coming out today. I know I'm probably going to have you back on the podcast in the future. We got a lot of other stuff to discuss that we didn't even get into. I mean, we could speak hours about individual things here, but I'm glad to have you today. Hope to have you back, and Real Dirt with Chip Baker, Steve Geeter.
Nice. Thanks, Chip. I'd love to be back anytime, and I had a great time. Thank you.
Great. Awesome, brother.
Have a good one.
This has been The Real Dirt. I'd like to give a shout out to our sponsors, Canacraft, Pickle Consulting, Denver Consulting, Cultivate Colorado, and Archive Seeds. Also want to mention Willow, Chris, Lisa, Michael and Hollis for helping make this episode possible. Thanks, David. Your music advice is invaluable. This has been The Real Dirt. Stay dirty, my friends.